I'm William O'Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com with the first of a two-part 2014 recap for my All About Jack podcast. 2014 was a busy year of releasing new shows. At least the last 5 months were. More about that later. At the start of the year, I didn't have a particular day for posting new shows, but eventually settled with Mondays. Although this didn't mean it was always a new show that I posted, you could usually count on something that day, even if it was previously released material. I ended up switching locations for hosting my audio files in August of this year. All new shows can now be found at allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. In this first of two shows reflecting on the previous year, I wanted to reflect on the material I released throughout the year. This part is just for those shows before the move, so I'm just considering what was posted through July of this year. I released 15 new shows during that time. 19 more were done the final 5 months that will be discussed next time. I began 2014 with only one new show in January. It was an interview I recorded in late 2013 with William Griffin, where the focus was mostly on his unique biography called C.S. Lewis, A Dramatic Life, that was released originally in the 1980s. The book was released in the UK as C.S. Lewis, The Authentic Voice. I also continued reposting some essay chats that were first released in 2012 and some other earlier shows that included an encore of an original piece I did called Screwtape Speaks at Demon Chapel. Part of the reason for sharing that program again was I was soon releasing an interview with Paul McCusker about the Screwtape Letters Annotated Edition. It was posted in early February.
Overarching one is, why even have an annotated edition of the Screwtape Letters? Kind of part one is, it's such a short book of satire, and then second, shouldn't those who want to learn about references Lewis makes in the book not be so lazy and do their own research?
Well, it's, and there's kind of a two-part answer to the question. One is, the overriding goal whenever I've worked on C.S. Lewis projects, whether it's the audio dramas or something like the annotated Screwtape, I feel like sort of Arthur Fiedler with the Boston Pops, back when he expressed his mandate, that his goal was to make classical music as accessible to the populace as possible. He wanted to get classical music out of the realm of upper class, oh, that's for the intelligentsia or people that aren't like me. And he almost became a bit of a laughingstock among I want to say diehard classical music buffs, because he pretty much did whatever he had to do to make it accessible. And it's the same thing, not that we want to be laughingstocks, but with the audio dramas, for example, we wanted to do audio dramas from our expertise that would either introduce people to the work of C.S. Lewis, like with Chronicles of Narnia and Screwtape, or reintroduce people. A lot of people that I had talked to who, for example, with Screwtape, they had read it years ago and hadn't picked it up since. And one of the reasons why they hadn't picked it up was because even though it's very funny and they got, you know, glimpses of themselves in it, they had a hard time with references that they either glossed over or, you know, they just couldn't be bothered to look up. And a lot of times people are reading these things on airplanes and they're wherever they happen to be, and so easy access to the references just wasn't available to them.
Other new shows dealt with the 2014 colloquium at Taylor University and a couple of older books by Robert Velarde, along with other repeats that included more essay chats. If you've never heard an essay chat before, here's the explanation I shared at the start of one of them.
Well, the focus today is, again, a single essay by Lewis and providing some comments that we hope will spark your interest in reading it, maybe for the first time, or if you've read it before, that you go back and read it again.
Nearly all the reposted essay chats are also available at the newer allaboutjack.podbean.com location. These include discussions of Is Theology Poetry?, The Seeing Eye?, and another essay called Meditation on the Third Commandment, among others. It was at the very end of March that I started a mini-series on Lewis and Women with Dr. Crystal Hurd. Gina D'Alfonso was my co-host for four shows that clarified some misunderstandings about Lewis's views on females. Here's how I started out one of those episodes.
Well, Dr. Hurd is the person who's in the hot seat. She's no stranger to uncomfortable situations. When she was defending her doctoral thesis on Lewis and leadership, she had someone involved in that final step complain that Lewis encouraged the oppression of women. That situation was one of the reasons we are here today, as she created a series of blog posts at her website, crystalhurd.com, which provided a detailed defense to clear up such ill-informed views about Lewis's perspective on the fairer sex. Welcome back to All About Jack, Crystal.
Thank you for having me, William.
Well, the focus on this second program today is looking at the factual women in Lewis's life.
All four shows were released by early May. Then I followed up that with another serious topic with a single interview examining the C.S. Lewis phenomena. I asked author Dr. Samuel Jokel to summarize his book. Here's part of what he had to say.
My book suggests that Lewis's accomplishment is best understood when he is conceived as a public intellectual. The term public intellectual was coined in 1987 by Russell Jacoby. At least he's given credit for coining the term at that time. A public intellectual is simply someone who possesses the expertise of a scholar and the communication skills of a journalist. So the public intellectuals translate complex ideas or arguments to the layperson. So just to give you an example of someone we all know who might be considered a proto-public intellectual, Galileo. It's not that Galileo had anything particularly original to say. The heliocentric theory of the universe had been around for a while, but what distinguished Galileo, among other things, is that he wrote in Italian rather than Latin. He wrote in the language of the common person rather than the language of the learned. So he got these ideas through to a wider swath of the population. So that's how I characterize Lewis's accomplishment as performing this function of the public intellectual. I also make the point that a public intellectual becomes symbolic of the position he or she holds, that their names become branded, so that when you hear their name, you immediately think of the positions they hold and what they stand for. Public intellectuals also deal in what one scholar refers to as solidarity goods. These are rallying points for like-minded individuals. So this all means then that public intellectuals are quick to argue, and they have a lot of people depending upon them, a lot of people looking to them for to support their positions and looking to them for guidance. And I also trace this phenomenon of the public intellectual to the rise of the public sphere.
Then after taking a short break from new shows, I kicked off a string of 5 weeks of new releases in June by sharing a short talk I gave at Taylor University. There I presented a paper on What Lewis Never Wrote. This is a small segment of what I shared.
A quotation is either by Lewis or it's not by Lewis. That sounds kind of obvious, but let's, you know, state the obvious. It doesn't matter if it's a statement that you like or how close it is to something that Lewis actually said. He either wrote it or he did not write it. Let me begin by using a quote that obviously Lewis did not say, but some people falsely attribute this quote to the Bible: money is the root of all evil. Of course, something very close to this is in the Bible, and it's in 1 Timothy 6:10. And it says, the love of money is the root of all evil. What does this have to do, this, you know, first quote that I'm sharing regarding Lewis?
While at Taylor, I spoke with Dr. Kevin Radiker, who does a dramatic portrayal of Lewis. This was followed by another chat with Paul McCusker. That one was about a book version he created as a companion to the 2013 dramatic production about the creation of what we know today as Mere Christianity, done by Focus on the Family. There were three more new shows before my move to allaboutjack.podbean.com. I chatted first with Peter Byram about three YouTube videos from the 2013 C.S. Lewis Symposium, After having Peter tell a little about himself, I asked him to describe the symposium itself and what was actually filmed.
Well, that was part of the memorial of C.S. Lewis, because, of course, last year was the 50th anniversary of C.S. Lewis's death. And so that was part of a two-day way that Westminster Abbey Institute were marking that anniversary. The symposium on the 21st of November, that was a series of talks and a panel discussion about Lewis's legacy, what the kind of work that he produced from an apologetics point of view, and then what we can do with it as apologists in the 21st century. And then the day after that was the memorial ceremony in Westminster Abbey itself, which included unveiling a memorial stone to C.S. Lewis in Poets' Corner. So these videos are the first day of those commemorations. It's the symposium that they held the day before the memorial ceremony, with all of those talks and those apologists and various speakers giving their thoughts on C.S. Lewis.
Then I shared a conversation I had about the latest issue of Zenzook, the C.S. Lewis Journal. Dr. Bruce Johnson told about the combined Volume 7-8 issue of the publication. You'll have to follow the link in the show notes for details about the content. For now, I'm sharing his explanation of the name behind the journal.
The word Sehnsucht means desire or longing. It's a German word, a compound of the verb sehnen, meaning to long for, and the noun Sucht, meaning addiction. And it was the late D.G. Kell who proposed this name for our journal back in 2005. Dell laid out for us how Sehnsucht was a theme found not only as the joy of surprise by joy, but throughout the many writings of C.S. Lewis. So Dell began to take us through book by book the Lewis corpus and pointed out how we see this sense of longing, this theme of longing in so much of what Lewis wrote. And as he did that, Dell also brought in other writers, Goethe, Novalis, Thomas Wolfe, F. Scott Fitzgerald. And soon became apparent to me that Dell knew far more about German and English literature than I could ever hope to know. But he finally convinced us that that would be a good name for our journal.
The final program I want to discuss for this 2014 recap was a more somber one, as it dealt with several friends offering their reflection on the passing of Dr. Christopher Mitchell, who had worked as the director of the Marion E. Wade Center at Wheaton College before teaching a short time after that at Biola University. For obvious reasons, it's not easy to pick just one of them, so you need to follow the link in the show notes if you would like to hear that. Well, thanks for joining me for this first of two episodes showcasing a few excerpts from some of the shows from 2014. Be sure to visit EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com regularly to hear more interesting conversations related to C.S. Lewis. The website also has many other features, including a daily fact, quote, and quiz question.